Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I am Tracy Hotchner, your dog's best friend and your kitty cat's best friend, bringing you authors and experts every week to enhance your appreciation of the pets who share your lives. Please give a listen to all my new Pet Talk radio shows on the Radio Pet Lady Network, co-hosted by top experts at RadioPetLady.com. Dog Talk is a production of Eight Paws LLC, which is solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you with the generous support of Platinum Performance Supplements, Precious Cat Litter, Nordic Naturals Omega-3 Fish Oils, Feel Away and Adaptil, and Waruva Pet Foods. Waruva is a privately owned company named after the owner's cats, Webster, Rudy, and Vanessa. They are dedicated to the highest quality ingredients in their cans and pouches. People could even eat it because it's all made in a human food facility, so everything in there is good enough for us to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky cats, especially those who are trying to transition away from dry kibble. I am here with a fascinating bunch of people, two of them highly creative, the other one a dog trick artist. Ann Garvin's book, The Dog Year, is absolutely amazing about things much more than dogs, actually. Brandon and Casey are going to be here with their mini film festival indie film called Gone Doggy Gone. And then Erica Etchison is back to tell us how to do some really cool tricks with our dogs in the water and out. And I'm going to jump right in with Ann Garvin, who's a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and a very enthusiastic novelist. And it is great to have you here.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to talk to you.
Well, I'm just, I just don't want to give away anything because I know you're not supposed to in interviews, but so much of this book just screams you want to know which of this is autobiographical. Did you have kleptomania? Did your husband die? Oh God, I hope he didn't. Did you have a sperm bank issue? And did you adopt a dog from a shelter called Little Dog? As an author myself, I can, you know, it's almost rude. Like, oh, I'm glad you think it's so realistic, but it has nothing to do with me. So which is it? A little of the above? None of the above?
Oh, a whole lot of it is my imagination. Almost all of it is that.
Wow.
But it comes out of, experiences where I had a dog that kind of really made my life a lot better after a very difficult time. And I witnessed a woman try to steal something from a store once, and I just was really fascinated with the idea of why people that are obviously don't need it do that and how they must feel during and afterwards. So
what I loved about your book, The Dog Year, and I'll just give you guys a sense of like the one of the many awesome quotes on it, the story of a woman who had everything, lost everything, and now wants to shoplift the rest. Hilarious, poignant, and heartbreaking from the author of The Deep End of the Ocean, Jacqueline Michard, or Michard. And I think the idea that the dog is very much a part of the life of this character and very much a part of her survival, growth, rejoining the human race. But there's so many other super fascinating parts to this book. I guess the shoplifting is fascinating to me because I've never read about a character who's that shoplifter, this very successful plastic surgeon of breasts, who it's clear why she's shoplifting. She knows why too. And I wonder how many people either have experienced it personally, seen personally, lived through it with someone. Did you do a lot of research or did you just use your own intuition? Like what drives that train?
Well, I did use my own intuition mostly. And I think that why my character does it is a little bit different than some of the other characters. Like when you hear things about the famous people that do it or the old Miss Americas and things like that, I think they talk about how much pressure there is to be beautiful and how they can't afford it and they keep moving forward, doing things, making choices that they maybe shouldn't make. But mine was really, my character is just trying to fill a hole. And
yes.
I think she thinks
the world owes her something that's been taken away. And it's really, it's just a great metaphor, analogy, simile. It's just, it's great because the book's very funny. and the arrival of the dog, and then you have an anorectic lady that she meets at the support group that's kind of an AA meeting, but it's a kind of a mishmash of people that have to go to meetings, and she has a dog. There's a number of dogs in it. So when you went through the hard time in your own life, was your dog already in your life, or did you add your dog afterwards?
When I started to see that there was coming in my life some sort of trouble and hardship, I started to reach out to have a dog. I used to have cats all the time, and then after the birth of my second daughter, I got a terrible allergy to them. So I got a dog, and then I started going to the dog park because it was such a rambunctious labradoodle, and he was so crazed that I started spending a lot of time at the dog park. And then I saw a lot of other people that were just struggling with all kinds of things. But finding each other and so much joy at the dog park kind of pulled people together. And that was really my experience. I think I just got to spend time with people who were also having a difficult time. But when you're at the dog park, you almost can't feel anything but joy when you're watching those dogs with those tongues and those ears and everybody in full out runs.
Yes, and having a great time. And I think it's a reminder to people who are just going through little bumps in the road, not major roadblocks, if you will, that those times spent with dogs really are reparative, restorative, curative. And sometimes we take them for granted, whereas somebody hanging on by their toenails, it's really clear that, gosh, I wouldn't leave bed. I wouldn't leave the house. I wouldn't get up if it weren't for the dog, which isn't what this book is about, by the way. I want to make it clear that this book is super funny. I also, just so you know my bias, which I've talked about to my wonderful listeners many times, I really was not interested in yet another book about my dog fixed my anorexia, my dog fixed my broken heart, my dog, you know, it rescued me. And there's a whole spate of books about that, and I'm sure it's true. And those might be really well-written books, but it's really just about me, me, me. And this is a true novel, a very deeply felt and hilariously wrought, and the characters are very much individuals. We can see them. We can smell them sometimes. We can feel them. I feel as if you must have had, being a professor, you probably are, you know, have a lot of busy paperwork and have to do writing and stuff. But I have a feeling that when you did this, you really enjoyed yourself.
Oh my gosh. Writing fiction for me is a lark. Like when I get to do it, it is probably the best things I get to do. I get to just sort of immerse myself in these characters and be out of my own life. And then you also get to create the world that you want, which is a really fabulous thing for me to be able to do whenever things aren't looking so hot in my world or something. Or I think, oh gosh, life is so unfair. I can create something a little bit fairer.
Yeah, you can somehow even the score. What about volunteering at the Humane Society, which is one of the things that your character does? And then, I don't know, it just really cracked me up that there was some form she had, a number of forms she had to fill in. And one of them was about euthanasia. Just talk about that topic in and of itself, because I'm just sorry. It was so great. The little girl in the waiting room who's parroting all the things her politically correct mother tells her. That's a great scene.
Oh, thank you. Well, I did go, you know, I just recently adopted a second dog at the Humane Society, but when I was writing this book, I did go there and I asked them to show me the paperwork and walk me through what I would be able to do if I was going to be volunteering. And, you know, some of that definitely was made up and I spent a lot of time, but some of they're so earnest at the Humane Society that it's hard not to laugh a little bit at their, I mean, I'm not making fun of them really, because the earnest is what's so fabulous about it. But right, that when they're so earnest about what you have to feed them, and that you have to laugh a little bit. So
you can't have pepperoni in your pocket when you go through. It's just going to give them an upset stomach. Don't even think about it, y'all. And then about the euthanasia, there's some form filling out, you know, do you have anything against it? And then your character asked, would you have to be involved in the euthanasia? Which the character is earnestly asking because her life's kind of upside down. Yes. But they have to go get the director. Was this anything that happened to you, or did you just imagine it?
No, I just imagine it. I just kind of imagine what it must be like to feel so confused and then walk in there and get that kind of piece of it and then not be able to sort of make sense of it.
Yeah, which I mean, I think is life, that we might micro-focus on some part that really is not the point of what's going on.
Exactly, that's exactly it. Yeah.
And it makes it delightful and makes us all realize, I think it just, many times in the book, it lets us have a good laugh at things.
Yeah.
In fact, I would love you to read, there's a section, the character has a sort of accidental love affair that she's very torn about, but early-ish on or middle way through, she winds up going to the Humane Society with this gentleman to look at dogs, Mark. Now, our main character's name is Lucy. So I'd love you to read a little bit about it. I just think it gives everyone a fabulous flavor of the dog year, which, by the way, the book, you know, it's really one of those books where, yes, little dog is in it, and the way dogs weave through some of the people's lives is there. But really, it is so much more than that in the best sense. It's not another book about from the dog's point of view or the dogs in every page. It's just the dog is part of her life, and her life's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And the dog doesn't fix it, but the dog is a witness to it in the best
right.
sense.
Yeah, he is a witness.
Yeah, so let's talk about going to or read to us from when they go to the Humane Society to have a look at a few dogs, Lucy and Mark, her non-beau.
Okay, I will. Okay. Past the front desk, Lucy peered into a room with a large picture window. Inside sat a worn, overstuffed couch with bites taken out of each foam-filled arm. A panel on the door read Privacy Separation Room. There was a chew toy tossed in the corner and a bottle of Kleenex perched on the small shelf. Probably all kinds of tears being mopped up in that room, thought Lucy. She felt Mark's eyes on her and met his gaze. He nudged her with his shoulder. Don't go getting soft on me already. I need you to yay or nay my selection. I can't be going home with some basket case because you got all weepy looking at an empty room. Bring it on, pal. I'm tougher than I look. As she spoke, Mark pushed his way into the room that held the kennels, and her words were completely drowned out by barking dogs. They passed the first kennel, empty except for a steel water bowl. The space lined with cement block was clean, spacious, and shut off from the viewing area by a chain-link fence. The second kennel held a ginger scruff of a dog that resembled a loofah in Lucy's shower that she hadn't gotten around to throwing away. The dog stood within an inch of the chain link and let out a series of ear-splitting yips. The index card close pinned to the fence read, Trixie, stray, no tags, awaiting health clearance. Lucy pushed Mark forward to the next dog. Keep moving. The next kennel held a black Rottweiler with a head the size of a Volkswagen. He lay with his enormous cranium on flatbed paws, with his hind feet daintily canted to the side like a woman riding side saddle. After a moment, Lucy noticed his other distinguishing characteristic. He had a penis and scrotum so large it looked like a wrinkly toddler nestled up against his side. Lucy cleared her throat and said, "This guy's for someone suffering from small man syndrome." Without taking his eyes from the dog, Mark said, "I'm here to tell you that we could move right along. I'm good." Lucy tore her eyes from the dog's package just as he gave her a trucker and a stripper bar grin and dropped his tongue in a yawn as if to say, "You say the word, baby." Lucy said, "I feel a little violated."
This is just, to me, completely captures the tone of the book. It's charming. It's funny. But it's very, you know, very well noticed. I mean, your description of what it's like to go into a shelter, and anyone who's done it has that trepidation. Oh, God, are we going to be sad? What are we going to see? Are we going to try and go home with the saddest little waif? Or, you know, when it said separation room, did you take that to mean people giving up their dogs and saying goodbye to them?
Yes, I think that is the room, because there was a room just like that in the pound that I went to, and there was, it said just that, privacy separation room, and it is where they give up their dogs when they have to leave them. And it's also the place where you get to meet your, you know, a possibility of a new dog. But yes, when I saw that, I thought, oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yes,
and occasionally,
I never thought of it, actually, but many people give up dogs, they have no choice, and any of us that loves our dog a lot and would have to imagine that moment. Ooh, boy, that'd be harsh.
Yes, and we left. I just recently, the last time we were there, there was a woman leaving, and she was crying, and I just thought, oh, she must have gone in that separation room. It's such a terrible thing.
Horrible, because you don't know what the rest of the dog's life will be like, and you know you really want them and will miss them. I get all kinds of rehome dogs, in my case, always Weimaraners, and I don't hold anything against the people. I mean, I wish they hadn't done the impulse buy at the pet store in the case of Maisie that I had to drive to Virginia Beach for. The impulse buy at the Smith Haven Mall Puppy Mill Pet Store. Yeah, well, at least they, you know, why'd they have to take her so far away? I had to drive so far to get her.
Right.
But, you know, they meant well. Whatever it is that they meant, they had an idea, they had a dream, and it all came to bits when they realized that this cute little blue-eyed darling little puppy was going to turn into some gigantic, you know, needy of many things dog that they simply couldn't supply.
Yeah.
How did you get your, or what is your second dog? Is your first one, what is the name of your first one? Little dog is Lucy's dog. What's your dog?
My dog's name is Millie, and we call her Margaret Thatcher because she's got a very Margaret Thatcher kind of bearing about her.
I love it. I love it.
And she's a Labradoodle, and she is like the world's best friend. So she's a very sweet dog. And then my new one is a mix, I think, between a Jack Russell Terrier and a poodle.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he has got a lot of energy. He's pretty adorable, and it's a darn good thing he's really adorable because he is a tough cookie because he barks so much. But when we went to pick him up, it was funny because they said, oh, he's an adorable dog, and there was a list on the thing on the kennel of what he was, and we thought, oh, that's the kind of dog we want. So we went to the room where they meet you, you know, your dog to you, and we hadn't seen him yet, and they brought him to us, and he was shaved and had a collar because he had just been fixed, and he had his balls were like plums and purple, and he could not have been uglier. And we were like, oh no.
Help.
Then we all felt very superficial, but we did take him.
That's so funny.
But yeah, he grew quite into his looks.
That luckily you can say it wasn't a vanity project.
No.
It wasn't a Labradoodle or a Golden Doodle. You can say, well, you know, I wanted something that just looks marvelous.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Anne, it's a wonderful book. I really
wish and hope
that it should get so much good things happen to it that you write the sequel, because I want to know what happens next to Lucy and Mark and all these characters. You've created a wonderful world. It's really a pleasure and a delight.
Thank you.
So I'm just hoping everyone finds The Dog Year. There'll be a link to it, I guess, on Amazon's always seems to be.
Yes.
Easiest place with the podcast of the show. But it's truly delightful. And if you know anyone who has any addiction issues, especially shoplifting, wow, it's really great. They could read a book about themselves while having some dog ear at the same time. It's definitely a great package. And thank you so much for writing it. And congratulations on a job so really well done.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me today.
You take care. Have a great rest of the day. And bring us another book soon.
I will. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back after this quick word with Brandon and Casey from Gone Doggy Gone. This show has been supported by Platinum Performance since its first broadcast. Platinum Performance makes comprehensive nutritional supplements which contain nutrients designed to improve overall health at a cellular level, especially joint health and the arthritis that comes with aging. Platinum Performance makes supplements for dogs, cats, horses, and people, too. We are also supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptyl for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Feelaway and Adaptyl plug-in diffusers are stress relievers that can help with anxiety or behavior issues and also help adopted pets make the adjustment to their new homes. Veterinarians carry Feelaway, which can reduce problems in a multi-cat household, and they have Adaptyl collars, which can help dogs with anxiety from separation, thunderstorms, or travel. I am back with Brandon Walter and Casey Brown, who made the coolest indie pick, an independent film called Gone Doggy Gone that has hit the independent film festival circuit. Audience awards, People's Choice, people are in love with this movie, and I am not surprised. Brandon and Casey, it is great to have you on Dog Talk. Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Okay, so let's get this clear. We know about teams that are writer-producers, writer-director. Who does what? Because this film, although it's an independent film and I think your first film, looks so polished and so mature and so, like, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but like, you know, like a mass market major-looking movie, you guys did an amazing job, and you did it just yourselves. Which of you did which part, or did you both do everything?
Well, we split up the roles pretty equally, actually. We wrote it together. Casey and I directed it together.
Wow.
And we starred in it, produced it. Yeah, we did all these roles. We've had a lot of experience being out in L.A. for the last 10 years, so we put all of our experience together and were able to make this movie.
Well, yeah, like Brandon said, it's our first feature film, but we had a sketch comedy show on the internet before that where we learned how to polish our skills of working together.
Oh, that was smart. Well, it reminds me in that sense of Portlandia, which is one of my new favorites. I'm probably late to the party. Everybody else already found it. But the idea that two people collaborate is, goes way beyond the Coen brothers. You didn't just direct it together, even write it together. You're just like, you are this movie. Gone Doggy Gone is about a doggy kidnapping from people that are overly invested, almost farcically overly invested in this little Yorkie. It kind of reminiscent, if anybody wants kind of a flavor of what some of the couples were like in Chris Guest's film, Best in Show, which of all of his brilliant movies, it may be not even his most brilliant, but it's the one everyone loves the most. Did you think about that at any point? Did you remember like the Weimaraner on the Shrink's couch and think about that?
Oh, definitely. We actually compare our movie, it's funny you said that, to Best in Show and Little Miss Sunshine, kind of mixed up.
Yes.
Because it ends up being a road trip when we chase down the kidnapper.
It is absolutely that. It's these crazy characters. And at some points, I think, are you poking fun at people that are overinvested in their dogs? Well, it is funny when they're overinvested and they've got outfits for them and strollers. And of course, the poor, pathetic dog sitter who's just, I don't know, like the perfect anti-heroine. Do either of you have a dog?
Yes. In fact, that dog in the movie is my actual dog.
No way. Seriously? Right. How did you know that that dog would be, it's a very movie star dog. I mean, it's his, what's that, the one in the Something in Beverly Hills that had quite the you know, Hollywood Disney dog?
Was yeah,
it,
the,
was it Down and Out in Beverly Hills or?
It was Legally Blonde.
Yeah, Legally Blonde. But I even think there was maybe that Nick Nolte, Bette Midler movie might have had a dog really cute like this. How did you train this dog to be such a? She's a really good movie dog.
Thank you. Yes, you know what? She loves to learn and perform, and I knew that when I would just try and teach her tricks, like crawling on the floor, sitting, or I would say paw, and she'd like wave at me.
Well, you know, that's really funny because the guest after you is a professional dog trainer in water sports, but she particularly loves to do trick training and trick training in the water. You'll have to listen to her interview and see if you can teach your little darling some more tricks. What's her name?
Her name is actually Layla.
Just like that. Oh my God. So she's going to have like a whole Facebook page. She probably is going to have a whole life of her own, right?
She has one. She has a Facebook page and it's called Littles. Because in the movie, her mommy in the movie calls her Layla, but the dog sitter that watches Layla calls her Littles to sort of take some ownership over the dog because she really likes hanging out with the dog too. So she calls her Littles.
Excuse me, really likes or is like desperately overly attached? Really likes. There's the understatement of the year. It's so funny that these two different, the couple that are overly protective and overly into the dog and they don't seem to have any sort of a life other than the dog have this over attachment. But so does this single girl who views this little dog as her only best friend. Has that ever been you? Or do you worry that could be you in your worst moment?
Actually, it came from a real life story of Casey's dog sitter.
No.
Her name was actually Jill. And she was taking the dog out all the time, taking photos of Layla at the salon, getting her nails, while she was getting her nails done at the movie theater and all these places. And I said to Casey, I said, what if she never brought your dog home? You know,
I love it. I love it. So it really was. So it really was life inspiring you because even though there's this over the top kind of hilarious farcical part, the truth is probably every single thing you're depicting is just about as over the top many of us get with our dogs. But the seed of that, you could totally see it happening. I mean, babysitters have run off with human babies, right? I mean, why not? Yeah. A dog is a much better target because who would want really somebody's baby, let's be honest. But we all might want each other's really cool dogs, especially one that can do all those tricks. So at what point did you think, okay, my dog's really a good learner and we have this really cool idea and Brandon loves it too, even though he doesn't live with, you know, crazy little Layla. Did you at that point think, okay, besides tightening up the dialogue, I have to teach her some more tricks? Or at what point did you have to kind of like tune her up to be a movie dog?
Well, like most independent films, this film took about 2.5 years from concept to completion. So I had, you know, the luck of living with Layla. So I would just teach her a little bit every other day for a year about. And then we tried to write her part in the movie so that she was mostly just a prop and being carried around because she's a 4-pound teacup Yorkshire Terrier. So we tried to make it so she didn't have to do that much, but it was pretty easy to teach her the things that she did have to do.
It's very funny because human babies on sets, as you guys obviously know, they're only allowed, you know, X amount of screen time and so many seconds per minute per hour, and you have to use a doll when you're not using, you know, when you don't see the baby.
We did too. We did too.
No.
Yeah. We had to have the Humane Society there every day. She has scheduled breaks.
No.
We had to use a stunt dog whenever we ran or did anything dangerous with the animal.
Cut it out. Are you serious? You mean even for an independent film with your own animal?
I'm totally serious. And by the end of it, Layla started getting a diva attitude.
She's like, excuse me, somebody else go pee for me. I don't need to do that. That's beneath me. Joan Rivers used to have a line in her Vegas show way back when, how Jackie Kennedy was so rich she hired someone to pee for her. I always thought that would be a good thing for a dog that doesn't want to go out in the middle of winter. It's like, can't someone else do this for me? It's really tiresome. Of course, you don't have winter in California. So the American Humane Association, one thinks of them as sort of being on the set of Westerns with the falling horses and, you know, make sure no horses' legs get broken. They're there on a little independent film with someone's own personal pet dog star?
Absolutely. It's a requirement. Our film is a Screen Actors Guild movie.
Oh, it was.
And the Humane Society is a service of the Screen Actors Guild.
That's funny. So she's an actor.
She is. She's the best actor.
Oh, my. And she's the best taken care of. I hope they didn't insist that she fly first class and be given, get on first online at the buffet table at the lunch break.
Well, you should have seen the size of her trailer. It was massive.
Yeah, for a 4-pound dog, I can imagine that a normal, like, just, you know, like a box would seem huge. This is so amazing. How did you, the movie looks so grown up. And I don't mean that all independent films aren't good films, but some of them just look kind of like homemade. And this looks so not homemade. But I realized that the pressure of how to raise the money and even if you were acting yourselves, everything just costs time as money. How did you do that? Did people read your script and just fall down laughing?
We got a lot of people on board because they love the scripts. And that's one of the reasons why we got off the ground. I mean, everybody was just so, they loved it. And that really helped a lot to make it to come to fruition. Mm-hmm.
So had you two ever written something together, or you'd only done improv sketches the way, in a sense, Portlandia, as I understand it, is improvised, but they have millions of notes. And in their case, like a whole team of writers to write the thing they're going to improvise. But what did you do? Have you ever written together, like, you know, beginning of scene, middle of scene, end of scene, acts and all that?
Oh, yeah. We actually wrote another screenplay. Actually, we wrote it before this, and then we realized that it was going to be too difficult to do, so we decided to do this movie instead. And we have another script that we're working on as well and a bunch of other ideas.
The show on
the internet was actually a scripted sketch comedy show.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
So the people that followed that and knew about it, did they become the early adopters of Gone Doggy Gone? And if so, how were they able to see it? You've been at a really impressive number of film festivals, which, having a brother who's a documentary filmmaker, and anyone who's ever tried to get into a film festival will tell you, it's really hard to get in, never mind win the audience award. Just being accepted is brutal. What do you think, besides the fact that it's really good and in 5 minutes someone can see this movie belongs in the festival because it's really good? You can tell instantly. But do you think this was kind of an internet sensation following of you two that followed it to this movie, or are they two separate worlds?
I feel like they're two separate worlds. I mean, we only did our sketch comedy show for a short while and we won some contests and things like that, but this is a whole other experience. And just like most indie filmmakers, we submitted to like 40 festivals and you start getting those rejections and you're just like, oh my gosh, will people like it? Will they?
Yeah. And you just don't know who's watching your movie.
That's
you know?
Right. That's right.
That's the problem.
Yeah, you don't know who's the person saying yay or nay even to a film festival.
No.
Maybe it's the janitor's third nephew. I mean, you really don't know.
And,
the smaller
somebody who doesn't like animals, maybe.
Yeah,
or
Brandon likes them too much and thinks this is offensive. How could you be so rude about a dog? Or I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
So you just sort of rattle off some of the film festivals that you've been to and the great awards you won, because you have two coming up. The Lighthouse International Film Festival is June 5 to 8 in New Jersey, right? Is that the one that's in New Jersey?
Yes.
That's my dog saying, yes, let's drive to New Jersey.
I want to see a dog film.
But you also have a very impressive thing happening at Grauman's Chinese, having lived in L.A. for years. Everyone who ever has been to L.A. has been to Grauman's Chinese. It's where all the footprints of the stars are, going back to Mickey Rooney and before, and the Walk of the Hollywood Stars. But it's a very, very cool restored theater. Is it true they hold the Oscars there now?
No. Well, they hold it at Hollywood and Highlands, the complex.
It's all owned by Grauman's Chinese, but there's Grauman's Chinese, which is the big building that you're talking about, and then they have six theaters in that block.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Highland, like you said, is where the Oscars are, and that's where we'll be playing.
So explain how this works, because it would be very cool if Dog Talk listeners across the country could somehow get your dream fulfilled, which is you just need to sell enough tickets for enough people to show up to see it that you'll then get a one-week release, an actual release of the movie?
Yes, and for anyone out there, it is so hard for an independent film to get a one-week theatrical release in a real movie theater that's
a huge
prize.
It's a life changer.
It's a life changer.
And you know what? For more people to be able to see the movie, it is so thoroughly delightful. If you get to that goal and people get to see it for a week in L.A., it would mean that there could be little theaters like I go to a little independent art film house in Williamstown called Images. They would take it for a week. I mean, all kinds of smaller art movie theaters would be thrilled to have it. There's not enough cool, original, interesting movies for them to even book. You know, they wind up taking Rio and 2D because there's not like a lot of choice of quality, mature kind of films. So what is it that people need to do if they tell the date of this event at Grauman's Chinese? So anyone listening, if you aren't in LA, but you could maybe tell friends that are there, what is it that they're supposed to do, you guys?
Yeah, if you guys are on Facebook or Twitter, or you can email your friends, tell them to go to Dances with Film Festival in Los Angeles. That's where it's playing.
Okay.
It is Friday, June 6th at 5 p.m.
Okay.
And the tickets will be $11 if you buy them before the 28th of May. And if you go, I'll tell you how to get the tickets, is you can go to gonedoggygone.com. And
perfect.
Doggy is spelled with a Y, not an I-E.
Good point. Gone Doggy Gone, spelled the normal way of doggy. So it would be really cool, because if you sell enough tickets to put enough bottoms in the seats, then you are guaranteed a one-week theatrical run. So really what it has to do with is getting enough dog lovers and even people that want to support independent filmmaking. I mean, this is a lot easier than a Kickstarter program. I mean, people are always like going on Kickstarter, please help me make this movie about, I don't know, the whales or something. This movie's already made and it's so fun and so funny. And if you remember the crazy, kookiest, weirdest parts of Best in Show, which is actually most of the movie, or Little Miss Sunshine, or those parts of Portlandia that are so odd, you think, really? And you're laughing and you just can't believe you're seeing it. I really think that a lot of that describes the feeling, the gestalt of Gone Doggy Gone. And selfishly, we on the East Coast would love it to get out there so that more people can go see it, because I think because it looks like a real movie, it is a real movie. It's not something you should stream on your computer. I mean, have the fun of going to a movie theater, right? Since it's already made its way to so many film festivals, there's no reason it shouldn't come to a theater near you soon.
Yeah, the theater experience of this comedy is such a different thing. I mean, it's really great, to the laughter that happens.
Yes.
Somebody will laugh at one joke,
Yes.
And then it just, the ripple effect in the theater. It's really great to see it in an audience.
Or the visuals, because Layla has outfits and costumes and strollers. And
yes, that's
and,
right.
And, the, and her mom is like so intense and so extreme. And I could see how the pleasure would be very much magnified by having other people amused and even bemused by what has this world come to. It's absolutely yeah. wonderful. I hope that, that Layla is getting all of the residuals that she should and all of the extra small pieces of filet mignon cut to her mouth size. And I'll also make sure that you guys get a couple of swell gifts from Nordic Naturals and some great all-protein treats. And she'll Yay. Want those to keep her complexion good and so forth. Because, you know, keep her out of the sun, of course, because you don't want her to prematurely wrinkle, although under all of her little Yorkie hair probably wouldn't be a problem. I think it's an amazing accomplishment, even if you someone had handed you a, you know, like a check and said, go on, you two, go make a movie, to have done it against all the odds and have come out with such a cohesive and original piece of work. It's great. And you got to be really happy. And I'm sure every day is like, oh, God, I hope this good thing happens and that good thing happens and that the momentum you've built really snowballs because you deserve it. And the film is truly delightful. So with the podcast of this show, there'll be a link to GoneDoggyGone.com so you can get in touch with Casey and she can walk you through the various ways to get to the Lighthouse International Film Festival in New Jersey, June 5th to 8th, or on the West Coast, it's June 6th at 5 o'clock. Is that right?
Correct.
So the same weekend, people could see it either in a film festival or in Grauman's Chinese, which is pretty cool, or in the Grauman's Theater. Thank you both so much. Congratulations. Take a deep breath. And is Layla spayed? I'm sure she's spayed. Because otherwise people would line up to have her children. Too bad. You could have got.
She's saved.
Yeah, I guess at 4 pounds, you don't really want to be a mother. It's like that idea is kind of scary. No. So she's just going to have to live a really long time, which luckily for you, Yorkshire Terriers live a really long time. So enjoy your life with her. And I look forward to you keeping us abreast of what she's up to. I also get to invite you guys onto Dog Travel Experts with my wonderful co-host Paris from dogtipper.com because you clearly had to do some traveling with her and I'm sure you have lots of funny stories and tips and that audience will love to hear them. Have a great rest of the day. Thanks for being with us. Take care.
Thanks, Tracy.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back with Erica and some dog tricks right after this quick word. Support for Dog Talk comes from Precious Cat Litter, which is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian who is dedicated to creating litters to appeal to pussycats and protect their health. All the Precious Cat Litters are low dust for the health of all members of the household. Touch of the Outdoors is their newest litter made from field grass that provides environmental enrichment for indoor cats and entices them into the litter box with the natural scent of the great outdoors. Support for this show also comes from Nordic Naturals, omega-3 fish oil products that provide dogs and cats with the same premium quality omega-3 fish oils as for people. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses responsibly sourced healthy wild fish and uses third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness in all their oils. I am back with Erica Etchison. We talked last week about canine water sports, and as promised, Erica is back to talk about tricks. Erica, it's great to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well,
I'm
very
so happy
excited.
To speak with you.
I want a preview of coming attractions in only 4 days or 8 days or 6 days, or I've lost track of count. I'm going to be at Camp Unleashed, and one of the things you're going to do besides try and get Jazzy comfy in the water, because not Jazzy. Jazzy's staying home. Maisie, I really am confused. Maisie only stands at the bank of a pond. She won't go in. But tricks, I think she's going to love to do. Now, just to make it clear where people can find you, because they'll be listening and thinking, God, I'd love to do that, but I can't go to Camp Unleashed. You hang your hat at the Greenleaf Pet Resort in Millstone, New Jersey, which is also a really cool boarding facility. And a lot of people with dogs in New York City bring their dogs there, right?
Correct.
Now, do you teach tricks to the dogs and then send them home pre-programmed with a trick, or do you only teach tricks with the human involved?
No, I actually do both. So I offer both options.
Ooh.
Yep, the owners can come in and I can teach you how to train your dogs, tricks in the water. So you're at the side of the pool, you don't even have to get wet. Your dogs are in the water doing the tricks.
Really?
Or if you want to drop your dog off and you want something different for your dog to do, let's say you don't want to do daycare every day or private playtime or nature walk, if you're like, I want to do something different. And if your dog loves the water, then I can teach the dog some tricks, you know, while they're staying there. And you can always come in for a refresher, or if you just want to, you know, have me demo it for you, what your dog can do.
That's really cool. So unlike obedience work, I guess there's a more politically correct word these days than obedience work, but what we all think of as a dog trained with good manners to do the things we want them to do when we want them to. I've always had a sense that people who send their dogs away to get that obedience training come back with a dog who they aren't consistent with because they don't really understand what was shown to the dog, and the dog isn't getting that same information from them. But with a trick, if you pick the right cue and you use something the dog already kind of wants to do by nature, it seems like it's more organic to the dog's own personality. Is that one of the things you think about when you're teaching tricks?
Well, you know, tricks has really gotten hot lately, and a lot of people are starting to create their curriculums around tricks because, you know, it just to say the word trick, you smile, right?
Yes,
think about fun.
Yes.
Asking your dog to sit is a trick. Asking your dog to come is a trick. Now,
that's
you
right.
Can do
you know,
fancy,
you said you that
can
last
do fancy
week.
Trick,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Jump through a hoop. That's a trick too.
Yeah.
So to me, I feel like they're like little snapshots of behavior. So it's like you don't have to think about, oh my gosh, I have to do 3 minutes of healing through a crowd of people. No. Okay. Let's start out doing something small, fun. And that's what we're going to do at camp. We're going to break it down. They're going to be really small tricks that you can learn kind of quickly. And then eventually you can actually build on a lot of tricks. You know, if your dog, you know, offers a paw, you can eventually turn it into a high five. So you can build tricks on top of each other. You can chain them together. You can create distance. So once you've got your dog that's like, hey, this is cool and you're doing something with me, then you can just build on it.
All right, then let me give you an example of a natural behavior of a dog. Maisie's a Weimaraner, and all my Weims have been very paw-ish, the way dogs can be very oral. A Weim will take their paw and smack you. I don't mean really smack you, but they'll put it on you, on your arm and or on your leg when you're sitting. It's a way to say, hey, pay attention or I want you. So I've always discouraged that because you don't want a paw coming at you or just certainly to someone else at the wrong time. You're holding a cup of tea or you just don't want a dog pawing you. But since they offer that naturally, what would be a way that you could turn, let's say, a natural behavior like that, not to do high five, not to do shake, because then you're encouraging them to do something that they naturally want to do anyway. How could you turn that into something that would work for you and still work for them?
Well, you have to put it on cue. So if
right.
you've got something, if you don't want your dog to be just smacking you, but it's something that they offer and they like to do it, you eventually have to put behaviors under stimulus control. So you have to put them under cue so that your dog just won't offer and smack you all the time.
Right. So since you know the dog has the natural desire, you're never going to suppress it entirely. So you want it to be when you ask for it.
Correct. Or you can, you know, the other thing you can do is you can take that paw behavior, let's say, so they like to do it and you don't want them smacking you, you can almost redirect it to like, you know, the Staples push button.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that was easy.
Right. So instead of, so you can actually start it on your leg, right? Because if that's what your dog's
pawing,
right. Put it on your leg. Right. And then now
cool.
They're actually going to be targeting an object and then
Love
you can
it.
Start moving that object around. So you're
Love
kind
it.
Of changing the behavior a little bit.
That's
so that they're
perfect.
Still doing what they want to do, but it's kind of discouraged them to smack you.
So you buy, let's say, the Staples, that was easy, banging thing, or there's doggy doorbells that the dog steps on. But something
yep.
where it steps, it makes a noise. So it's kind of clicker training you and the dog. Yes, that's what I want.
Exactly.
And then that object that they paw if you say the word paw when they do it, if that's the phrase you want to use, then when you put it on the floor and they go for your leg, if they're smart, she's pretty quick and smart, and a lot of dogs are, would you point to the floor? There's that thing that was on my leg before. How do you transition it from the place where you have to start with to the place you'd prefer it to be?
You can use little hints. So, like, pointing to it would be a hint, and then eventually you want to fade your hint, and then she would just see the object, or you would then put it under a cue, right? So you would kind of fade your point and only reward her when you're saying the cue.
So you sit down and you're used to your dog, let's say, nudging you with their nose even. There's various things dogs do that they really just want to get your attention, but we might find it either ourselves or that particular dog's way of doing it really annoying or inappropriate. But just saying no is horrible because the dog's trying to interact with you as best they can in their own personal way. So that nose nudging, call it nose, or that pawing, call it paw. You give the cue, right? That's what you mean, right? You use fancy words, but just to put it in layman's terms, and you reward it with a good cheese or a little meatball or a little dried, freeze-dried, halo, live a little treat. In other words, you say the word as they're doing it and you treat it. Is that right?
Right. So you're going to treat it after they do it.
But
so
say the word.
The key is so you want, as they're doing the behavior, you're going to say paw.
Yep.
And then once they've done the behavior, you're going to mark it and you're going to say yes or good dog. And then you give them their treat.
And so you have that, let's say the staples, that was easy button on your thigh, let's say.
Yep.
So they only are told good and get a treat when they do it on that object.
Correct. So in this case, we want to discourage them pawing your leg. So you would take the opportunity, you know your dog's going to do the behavior. You're capturing the behavior. So you know your dog's going to do it. So you've got that staple easy button ready. And as soon as your dog's paw even probably touches it, because they may not know to push on it yet,
right?
So if he touches it and not your leg, I would mark that and feed your dog.
Right. Because you're not looking for the perfect hitting of the button. You're looking for the dog understanding that it's that thing other than my leg that I want you to paw.
Right. And then eventually he's gotten rewarded for hitting this or touching this thing. And then they actually, because that's what happens is the more you reward your dog, the more it increases the behavior. So then your dog's going to be like really excited about this object and you're going to see they're going to paw it harder. And so that's when you're going to start capturing him pushing it harder because they're actually going to keep working. If you've got a dog that's like, I've been rewarded a lot for this, now you start holding out for the dog to like hit it harder. They're going to try, right? They're going to hit it a couple times and probably on the second time they've hit it a little harder.
Now you're going to reward that. Like a mega treat, like more treats?
Yep, you can. You can be really enthusiastic when they do that.
Right.
And yep, you give them more treats. Yep.
So how do we avoid that dog becoming a monster pawer? Then they only can do it when you bring out your staples button?
Right. And you just start ignoring some of the behaviors. You don't even have to say no.
Right.
Just if you ignore the behavior, it will become less because that's it, right?
If
I'm rewarding you, I'm increasing behavior, and if I'm ignoring you and not giving you any attention, that's going to decrease behavior.
Exactly.
Because that's all that pawing is I want attention.
So let's say the dog, when you sit down, brings you over a toy to play with. Now, not everybody has my problem of having an 11-month-old, highly active, very enthusiastic, bright, and interactive kind of dog. But everyone has behaviors that their dog does that they've wasted part of their life going, no, Fluffy, no, which of course doesn't do any good at all. But the dog still is trying to do something communally with you. We could also, like, say the dog brings a ball. A lot of labs become OCD, in my opinion, with balls. They bring it and they bring it and they bring it and they bring it and they bring it. And they don't need any food reward. Their reward is that you take it from them and throw it again. Would it be an interesting idea to have a bowl, a bucket, a bin or something that they get rewarded for putting it in the bin?
Oh, yeah. Anything you can do with a toy that is constructive. So whether it's putting it in a toy, you know, building a toy chest behavior that they clean things up, putting it at a target. Maybe they can put it, I don't know, on a piece of tile or something, or on a mat.
So instead of bringing it to you, the trick becomes take that thing, that wet, gummy thing you've been pushing on me and trying to get into my hand. And, oh, it's so fun because you're going to get a treat if you send it over there, if you put it on that mat or on that tile or in that little bin.
Yep.
And then what happens when they get rewarded for that? They'll look around for other things to put in the bin, or do the clever ones take it out of the bin, bring it to you, and then put it back in for another reward? I mean, how bright is a bright dog?
It really depends on the value of the toy. And that's when I'm working with somebody, this is kind of the stuff we kind of problem solve, right? Because if it's a really high value toy you're working with, they're probably going to take it out. Because they really want that particular toy.
Yes, yes.
And what I really encourage people to do is get your dogs to like all kinds of things. So if you're using the same toy over and over and over and over, they're going to really get obsessed about that one toy.
So you mean you think that when a dog is really adoring something, there's some aspect of it that they're adoring, and you should try and get more objects that are similar in that aspect without being exactly like that. Like 20 tennis balls is not the solution, right?
Correct. So that, because if you just put, what happens is if you just throw something completely different to the mix, they're going to keep ignoring it probably.
That's right. That's right.
So that's why I just want to introduce something a little different, but of the same context. And then what happens is you'll see that then they'll start looking at other stuff too. But you got to kind of help them with that first transition. And then you can start putting in other different types of textures, colors, shapes.
So if you've come in late, I'm talking to Erica Etchison, who is going to be running the Canine Water Sports and Canine Water Tricks at Camp Unleashed, where I'm going. And we're talking about how to turn annoying behavior your dog may have outdoors or in the house into a trick and into a task that you shape their behavior into something that's more appealing to you, let's say. So do you really call anything the dog does under your command a trick? Because I love when you say sit is a trick, because we all think of sit as the really annoying math homework, when it really could be free play in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of attitude towards repeating something, learning something, and having it be fun.
Everything is a trick.
And that really helps us to feel more cheery and more enthused about it. So when let's say you have a dog that isn't into toys, but just wants, or what about a dog that really wants to tug? That's a tricky one, because that is a trick, but oh man, that's another one that kind of like, you know, rips your rotator cuff if, you know, they want to hang on and shake their head back and forth like they're killing something when it's really not what you had in mind. Is there a way to tether something to the ground and let them pull against the ground, or it's got to be you?
No. So that's actually, so one of the famous tricks that a lot of people do is the mailbox trick, right? So you've got a rope, so you buy a mailbox, or
okay,
you can have anything. We can even do it with the toy chest. So here we're,
okay,
you're already building your toy chest behavior, right? All right.
Yep.
So we talked about toys. We're talking about putting toys in a box, right?
Yep.
You can actually put a lid on your toy box with like a rope.
Ooh.
And the dogs can actually tug the rope to open the box.
That's very cool. And that's something people are, a lot of trainers are doing?
Yeah. So the mailbox trick, the toy box trick, you see these behaviors a lot. And some of it's because these dogs love to tug. So what do? All right, we're going to build stuff that you actually get to tug to open something up. You can even put something on your refrigerator door, and the dogs can tug that door open.
Well, that's of course what a lot of dogs do that are canine companions. Of course, you don't really want your dog checking out, you know, God forbid at nose level, there's something quite delicious, yesterday's roast. So I probably, in my case, don't want my dog to be able to open my fridge. But yeah, they can open anything. And you're saying that doing it as a trick, as a task, in itself is really rewarding to them, because something amazing happens, and probably people laugh and clap and say and act enthusiastic.
Well, and it starts using their brain, right? So if they're just finding their own things to do, if you start kind of working with them, when you're mentally stimulating them, you're actually making them more tired. Mental stimulation will actually wear your dog out more than physical stimulation.
I've often said that on the show, that a trick is the greatest way with a high energy dog to put all that energy to use. And, you know, people that study for the SATs are much more exhausted than people on the football team doing 1,000 runs around the football field, because their mind is just, you know, like worn them out. So this mailbox, would it be something, or the equivalent, something with a door that opens and then closes, would it be something that one would affix at kind of dog eye level to something? So it has to be attached.
You'd want to start with it at their level, but eventually you can raise. So this is how you start building on your tricks. So then eventually you want to raise that mailbox higher, so that then the dog is actually like lifting up and putting their paws on something, maybe to pull the door up. So then that is making the trick harder. So, and that's what's great about these tricks, is you can almost take any trick and make it harder, make it more advanced.
So really what we need to do is start small and then build on that and let the dog really be our guide in what it is that makes them happy, or mm-hmm. makes them or engages them, because in the end of the day, the bond with the human and the animal gets increased by having this communication and by asking them to do something that's a little beyond what comes to them naturally. You're building, I would think, a kind of a trust and a bond and an enthusiasm that nothing but a trick can really accomplish.
Yes.
At least it seems like that to me. I might have said that in such a convoluted way. She thought, okay, could nothing but a trick. Yeah, I kind of said that as a double negative. Well, I knew we were running out of time, and I just wanted to encourage people to not only consider, you know, going to Greenleaf Pet Resort and checking this out and doing it with you and doing water sports and tricks with you as well, but just to be inspired to take one thing your dog does and figure out from the way Erica has explained this so well, how to turn that into a behavior that you ask for, and the dog has to think a little bit before offering it. I myself am dashing over to Staples to get the "that was easy" button, which I've always kind of wanted. Don't you think in life there has to be those moments where you go, well, that was easy, right? So I think with our dogs, because sometimes things don't seem all that easy, it would be awfully fun to have that moment. I'm certainly going to incorporate it. Of course, then I might may not want one that makes a sound, because otherwise
just put it away. And that's what's great about it, is that when you bring that out, your dog's going to be like, oh, we get to do something together.
Right.
And that's when it all just, you both are going to smile and you're going to have a really great time because you brought it out, that thing that he's like, oh, great, we get to do something.
That is a great point. I cannot wait to meet you, Erica. Maisie, too. We're going to have so much fun. And yes, things should be kept special for special moments. I'm really looking forward to Camp Unleashed. I can't wait to meet you there and to bring back to the audience all kinds of ideas, tricks, and others from you. Thank you so much and have a great rest of the day.
You too. Thank you.
Take care. Well, have a great rest of a weekend, all of you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Kiss your kitties, hug your pooches. Have a really fun weekend, and we will talk again soon. Bye for now.